Good evening. The show begins tonight with doubts about the peace plans. There are two so far, a 28-pointer and a 19-pointer, expecting more. The peace plans propose to resolve the conflict in Ukraine by establishing a raggedy front line and making concessions by Ukraine. No NATO, capping the military, pulling back from segments of the provinces, the oblasts, that are said to be very advantageous for the defender. There are more points to discuss. However, I very much hold my guests, Hossein Haqqani and Bill Raggio, and then throughout the program, to commenting on the three possibilities that Gideon Rachman raises in his Financial Times piece. He's the chief foreign affairs columnist. One is that Ukraine does not take up the charge from the President of the United States to get this done by Thursday, Thanksgiving, and therefore the U.S. withdraws its aid with dire consequences. Two, that all sides come together and renegotiate or negotiate a more articulate plan that includes the front lines and concessions that Ukraine regards as the red lines. Or three, that the plan does not work. No one accepts it. Kyiv crosses its arms and turns away. And Russia attacks. Those are the three possibilities Gideon Rachman identifies. Number two is the one that everybody chose as the way out. Negotiate, negotiate. And that is the nature of contact. Wars end on peace tables, not on the battlefield. In this instance, Russia is making advances, but very small ones. There's much more to say in coming days. The story will continue to bounce around the capitals of Europe. Moscow, Japan is involved. Everyone's weighing in on this. You will recall the 14 points of the Versailles Treaty left us a century of tragedy. Still going on, tearing up the Ottoman Empire. So this one can be successful if it avoids a century of tragedy to follow. Turning to other stories, and there are a few, China's built a floating island that is said to be able to withstand a nuclear blast. Why they want such a thing? The term white elephant doesn't seem adequate to the scale of this island. Where they're going to deploy it? What does it mean? Brandon Weichert joins to comment. Malcolm Honlein weighs in on determination that Muslim Brothers are a terrorist organization. Yes, indeed, have been for quite some time. And other reports of Iran's water crisis, an economic crisis. Also, in Gaza, there are three hostages' bodies that have not been returned, I learned from Malcolm Honlein. And, of course, Hamas is not disarmed, as was called for in the ceasefire. Hamas dominates less than half of the Gaza that it did originally, but it continues to use hybrid tactics, such as firing out of crowds so that the return fire is guaranteed to wound a civilian. Teenagers with guns. All their fathers and older brothers are gone. Conversation then turns to the new world. The fleet remains off the shore of Venezuela. Maduro, the dictator, is said to not be sleeping. Well, yes, he has now been declared the head of a foreign terrorist organization by the U.S. State Department, an order signed by Marco Rubio. That means it's kill on sight. As far as the U.S. is concerned, no different from Al-Qaeda or ISIS. Drones follow them around and kill them. That's happened before. It has to be in Maduro's imagination. More than that, he's a marked man. So the negotiation may be advancing, or it may be that he has to meet his maker. I don't know. No one does at this point. Watching Venezuela, I talked to my friends Alejandro Pina Esclusa and Ernesto Araujo about other matters, too. There's a vote coming up in Honduras on the weekend that is said to be under the pall of a corrupt election run by Caracas, using the playbook, one man, one vote, one time, change the Constitution and stay in power. But the pink tide of these last years is ebbing. Hence Caracas, hence Chile, hence Buenos Aires, hence Lima, all these moving back to right of center. So there is promise for the very poor state of Honduras. Conversation about the battlefield with John Hardy. The moves are negligible. The Russians are making very little progress, but we have to expect the fact that the war continues into the winter as they negotiate, as the diplomats fly around Geneva and negotiate. Then a conversation, an interrupted now and again conversation about Syria trying to repair itself by showing checkpoints in the south of the country to Russian officers. Russia and Syria are intermarried from those years of the Soviet Union. And so I learned today from Ahmed Sharawi that al-Shara's brother, the man who's named himself president, his brother is married to a Russian national, as many Russian nationals are married to Syrian women. And you will recall the Assad regime is in exile in Moscow. The Syria story is not done, not even close. Talked to Jonathan Saya of FTD about Iran, and will Iran prosper from the Russian success in Ukraine? That's Victoria Coates' position. Not only will Iran prosper, but China will really prosper because it's the boss in the No Limits Partnership. That's Victoria's measure. And finally, David Daoud takes us through the Hezbollah story. The chief of staff of Hezbollah was targeted, killed by the Israelis in southern Beirut over these last days. But Hezbollah is regenerating, smuggling weapons coming in across Syria, just as always, money coming in, recruiting going on, biding their time, ready to strike out again when they're full power. The Ottoman Empire, remember, was torn up by Lloyd George, Clemenceau the Tiger, and Woodrow Wilson. They didn't know what they were doing. They couldn't. There were no rule books for tearing up a map of an empire that lasted since the 16th century, 15th century. In any event, we're tearing up the map now. What will happen in 111 years? I don't know. No one does. We can guess it'll be just like the past. People made mistakes because they were well-intentioned but didn't have the information they needed to tear up the map. Thank you for listening. Good night.